Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This time on Homicide.
When you start a cold case after 25 years, you're a long, long way behind when you actually start.
The police, they had no compassion.
This is a family member. You're always after answers. One minute I had a brother, and then the next minute he's just gone.
Go back to what the facts are. He can't be eliminated. All of a sudden it sort of went bang.
My heart absolutely stopped. I missed a beat.
It's unusual to actually nominate a suspect as strongly as Ron did.
This man has the potential to kill.
I'm Ron Eddles. As a kid, all I ever wanted to be was a detective. I ended up spending 42 years in Victoria Police, 25 years in the Homicide Squad. I investigated more than 320 murders and solved most of them. Every murder victim deserves a voice. And it was my job to be that voice. Now, I'm taking you step by step through my most challenging cases to show you how we track down the killers. This is Homicide.
Terry Floyd, Part 1.
The longest case that I ever worked on was the disappearance of Terry Floyd in June 1975. When I started to investigate this case in 2000, it was already 25 years old.
It's now nearly 50 years on and it's still unsolved.
So in 2000, I was in charge of the missing persons unit. I was also doing current homicides, so I had a joint role. I was contacted by a young journalist from the local paper at Castlemaine, which is a northern rural town in Victoria. She asked me what I knew about the disappearance of Terry Floyd back in 1975. In 1975, I was a young constable at Collingwood and I knew nothing about the disappearance of Terry Floyd. I then made arrangements for this journalist to come to the office, and the journalist came with a lady called Cheryl Kane. Cheryl was Terry's sister. She started off being very angry, upset. She was accusing Victoria Police of doing nothing about the disappearance of her brother. She said, "Ron, he was 12 when he went missing. No one seems to care. He's been missing 25 years. What are you going to do about it?"
I'd seen Ron a fair bit on the TV. He just seemed like a really good copper and a really nice man. So I thought, if anybody's going to get this case solved for us or just help us with something, it'd be him.
So it took maybe a couple of days to relocate the file, which had been put into the archives. It's 25 years old. If you go back to 1975, there were no computers, so everything was hand-generated. It was either written in longhand or typed up on an old typewriter. So some of the papers are fading, but it's a very basic record of Terry's story. It's Saturday, the 28th of June, 1975. The Floyd family live in Maryborough, a regional town about 2.5 hours northwest of Melbourne. Terry Floyd, age 12, was playing football at the Maryborough footy ground there with the under-15s. To be 12 and playing in the under-15s meant he had, I guess, what it took to be a footballer and had it in him probably to go on and be an A-grade footballer. After football, he wanted to go to Avoca to see a friend. Avoca is about 20 minutes from Maryborough. He got a ride with a man called Frank Drake, who was known as Unc. In Avoca, Terry went down to the post office, to the residence, and played Monopoly with his mate, Greg Jess, for the afternoon. Terry tells Mrs. Jess that Unc is going to pick him up around 4:30 and he needs to be down at the corner of the Sunraysia and Perinus Highway at 4:30. Greg goes with Terry and they walk down to that intersection. Terry says, it's okay, I'll wait here on my own. Greg says goodbye and Terry never made it home. So on Saturday night, or early hours Sunday morning, Terry's dad goes into the police station to report him missing. But it's not taken very seriously. Why? I don't know, because it's winter, it's dark. We're not talking about an 18-year-old. We're talking about a 12-year-old boy that needs to be raised to a higher level.
The police, they had no compassion. They treated us like we were just some hokey family who had no reason to be up there annoying them. They stood in our kitchen and told Mum that he was a naughty little boy who'd run away. He'll come home when he's hungry.
So what's going to happen now? You're just hoping upon hope that he's going to get in touch with you?
Yes, just hoping, or whatever the police can do to help us now.
If he happens to be watching television tonight.
Yes, and if you are watching, Terry, please get in contact with your mother and father.
Terry could be a wild little bugger sometimes, but he was very cute. I think if he got into trouble, he had that look on his face. He had that innocent look that it couldn't have been him that done anything wrong. But I can still hear his voice saying to Mum, are you coming down to watch me play footy today? And she said, oh, no, not today, love. She said, well, come down and watch next week. And he just said, OK, and then he was gone.
No, I don't think he's ever run away. He's always intended to come home.
No,
You don't run away with no money and no change of clothes with you. And he didn't have anything else on him.
Over a 10 or 15-year period, we were just all waiting, thinking the police were still on the case and doing something about it. Mum and Dad just plodded along as best they could and hoped that somebody might come up with information but nothing, but just silence for years.
If he is watching, if he does see this and he knows, it's just to come home and knock on our door and he's welcome home here. I don't think he is alive.
I think it weighed on her. She said for years afterwards, if only I'd gone the footy, he might still be here.
Darryl Floyd was only 9 years old when his big brother went missing.
The memories I have of Terry is just like yesterday. Not only was he my brother, he was also my best mate. Always played cricket in the backyard, and then, of course, in the winter was your football. Terry was a very good footballer. He was only 12, and he was playing for the under-15, so he's very gifted at it. When Terry went missing, I could not believe it. One minute I had a brother, and then the next minute he's just gone.
It's said that Darryl Floyd closely resembled Terry, and if Terry is still alive, it's assumed this is roughly how he'd look.
At first I thought, maybe Terry might have ran away, but then now I think that someone has taken him.
In 1986, we did a reenactment, which took 2 weeks to compile. We retraced Terry's steps and his movements that we knew at that point. They were going to solve all this and they'll get answers and that would happen and nothing eventuated from it.
Not knowing where he is or what's happened to him, it's the worst. It's not knowing, it's a killer.
You could see the pain in her eyes. You could actually see the pain of the torment and the trauma that she was going through. My mum passed at the age of 55. and I believe her passing was brought upon all the stress and trauma that was created in the last 12 years of her life.
Mum died 12 years to the day after Terry went missing. That was the 28th of June. So it's a double whammy, that date, every year. Yeah, you grieve for a little boy who never got a chance to grow up. And you grieve for a mum that didn't get a chance to get old.
So in 2000, on reading the file, it's 25 years on, I made a determination that the best way forward was to hold an inquest. In circumstances where someone is missing and you believe that they're deceased, you have an inquest. And the inquest is for a coroner to make a determination as to whether the person had actually died, and if they died, when they died, how they died, and was anyone responsible. I went to the coroner's court, got a case number, and told the coroner that I would reinvestigate it and prepare an inquest brief. When you start a cold case after 25 years, you're a long, long way behind when you actually start. Some of your witnesses have actually passed on. You don't have a crime scene. All you have is some documents, handwritten statements. So it's about going back to Maryborough and Avoca and re-interviewing witnesses.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Oh, I guess it's 21 years since I've been here, and Avoca is a town that probably hasn't changed too much. I can still walk around the town and see it as it was. At around 4:30, quarter to five on the 28th of June 1975, Greg just left Terry at this intersection. Standing here now, you actually not visualise it, but you can really feel it. It's winter, it's cold, it's been raining. I think about a 12-year-old boy standing on the side of the road, and his dad said, "You know what, Terry, you've got to be home at 5 o'clock. It's quarter to five, it's becoming dark." He's probably panicking. I'll get the first ride that comes along, which was a fatal mistake. So on the day that Terry went missing, he told Mrs. Jess that he'd been driven to Avoca by a man he referred to as Unc. Unc is a trainer at Terry's football club. So on reviewing the file and digging down and having a look, I established that Unc was in fact Frank Drake, the son of the Lord Mayor, and a known pedophile.
The initial suspect, Unk, was a man involved in the football club. His name was Frank Drake. He used to take the oranges out to them and all the kids and stuff. And he was a known pedophile in the town. Had molested a boy, gone to jail for it. And he was known by Unk because he just thought he was an uncle to everybody. Terry had told us about being in Unk's car when he'd go to the football with him. And Mum and Dad just said to him, don't you dare get in the car with him. Stay away from him. And then when Terry went missing, Mum was told to stop talking about Frank Drake because his father was a mayor and he came from a good family. And they would charge Mum if she didn't stop talking about him.
So in 2000, when I recommenced this investigation, Frank Drake was deceased. So it makes it very difficult then to go back and establish certain things because we're 25 years on. The thing that you've got to be careful of is that I don't have a bias. Frank Drake is a pedophile. I might have a bias against pedophilia. So therefore, you try to make it fit Frank Drake. Go back to what the facts are. Frank's car was a big American car. It was well known in the town. You didn't see many around. At 4:30 in the afternoon, a witness sees Frank driving in a particular street in Maryborough. Now at 4:30 p.m, Terry is still out on the highway about 20 minutes from Maryborough in Avoca. And then I found a statement which was made by Frank's sister, which said sometime after 4:30, Frank came to my house and he was here. So based on the evidence from the two witnesses, Frank was eliminated from the investigation.
There are people in the town to this day that are still convinced that it was Drake and that the whole thing was hushed up because he was the mayor's son. My name's Keith Moore. I've been a journalist for more than 40 years and I've been writing about the Terry Floyd case for a couple of decades now. I'm sorry, I find it a bit hard to believe that local police and Victoria Police would not investigate somebody because they happened to be the son of the local mayor. I'm not sure that the mayor of Maryborough was a particularly powerful person.
When Rhonda cleared Drake of this having to do with Terry, I just thought, no, who else is there? I just thought, no, he's got it wrong. Because everything just seemed to point towards Unc.
As a family member, you're always after answers. Sometimes they don't always come as the one that you want, but you're accepting to the answers that you get that help put a lot of these pieces of the puzzle together.
What I believe happened to Terry that day is that he walked to the corner of the highway. Maybe he was to be picked up by Unc, but Terry was late and he's decided to hitchhike home. The day that Terry disappears, three independent witnesses saw a panel van. Some call it light colour, some call it white colour. But on each occasion, there's a young boy standing beside it. One is a female telephonist who's going to the local exchange to work on the Saturday afternoon. She was starting work, I think, at 5 o'clock, so it's just before that. So she's looking out the bedroom window getting ready to go to work and she sees a young boy standing beside the passenger's door of a panel van, light in colour. She then comes outside, the panel van is gone and so is the boy. There's another witness who's driving, I think, towards Maryborough. He sees a panel van parked on the side of the road and at the back of the panel van he sees a young boy. And I think later on he says that that description fits Terry Floyd. So the last sighting is at the top of Bung Bong Hill by a nurse driving home to Avoca. She sees the panel van parked on the side of the road and a young boy standing beside it. So you have a period of time between say 4:45 and 5:15, so you're only looking at 30 minutes, but you have three sightings of a light coloured panel van, and on each occasion there's a young boy standing beside it. That is significant. That is fact. That's not a coincidence. The key to this investigation is who was the driver of the panel van on that day. So there are several suspects in the file. There's the local rural postman. He drove a 1968 Holden HK Ute, similar description. It's not as high as a panel van. He's interviewed, he provides evidence as to where he is, and he's eliminated from the inquiry. Number two was a man that was travelling to Adelaide on that day who had a similar vehicle. He'd been formally interviewed in Adelaide back in early 1976. And again, I spoke to some people and I was satisfied that he wasn't in the Avoca area at the time. Then we move on to Peter Webb. Peter Webb was a known pedophile in the Maryborough area. So I went and checked the criminal records, and at the time that Terry disappeared, he was in prison, which totally eliminated him from the inquiry. The next suspect that I looked at was another gentleman by the name of Raymond Jones. It didn't sort of jump out at me straight away, but when I started to go through and actually have a look, all of a sudden it sort of went bang. Lo and behold, Raymond Jones had a 1968 Holden HK panel van identical to what the witnesses described. And I couldn't believe it. At that time, back in 1975, he's on bail for sexually assaulting a young boy in a toilet block in Ballarat. All of a sudden, this is the strongest suspect in the file.
Next time on Homicide.
You have three sightings of a light coloured Holden panel van, and on each occasion, there's a young boy standing beside it.
My heart absolutely stopped. I missed a beat.
What if that was Terry's blood on those overalls?
He got quite upset, quite irate. He said, I'm sick of this. It was an impulsive attack. That changed the course of this investigation.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.